that became a theme as our company has evolved over 18 years, recognizing when we need help, when we need to pivot, when we need to just be vulnerable, recognize where our weaknesses are, and try to find solutions for them. That's an ever-evolving thing for us.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Peterson, the editor-in-chief of Business of Home. Welcome to Trade Tale. We're back for season 7 of the show, where I'll be talking to interior designers about the challenges, pivots, and perspective shifts that come with growing a design firm. My hope is that you hear your own why echoed in these stories, or an idea or way of doing business that sparks your own breakthrough. I hope it helps you realize that even when times are tough and entrepreneurship feels lonely, you're not alone. My guests today are a husband and wife duo whose creative partnership was a perfect match, bringing expertise in architecture and design to create spaces where each discipline informs the other. But as the years went on, they realized they couldn't do it alone, and it would take a carefully curated team to produce the kind of results they had always dreamed of. I can't wait to share it with you. But first, a quick word from our sponsors. This podcast is brought to you by Dallas Market Center, the largest and most active open daily design marketplace in North America. Designers can source from thousands of top brands across home decor, furniture, lighting, and more any day of the week. And friendly showroom staff help elevate your design business in a marketplace that's ready when you are. Design professionals, discover what's new, what's next, and what works in Dallas. Visit DallasMarketCenter.com to learn more about home and design resources, as well as upcoming design events and markets. This podcast is also sponsored by the Crate and Barrel Trade Program. Designers, if you haven't joined yet, it's time to check it out. You'll get access to beautiful, high-quality furniture and decor from 3 design-driven brands, Crate and Barrel, CB2, and Crate and Kids, right at your fingertips. Plus, there's a dedicated concierge team to support your projects from concept to flawless installation. Members get an exclusive 20% discount with no minimum purchase. Join today at crateandbarrel.com/trade to start enjoying all the perks this program has to offer.
I grew up in a creative family. My father is an architect and my mother was a fashion designer. So I was always surrounded by creative individuals. But when I was in college, it was very important for me to sort of like carve my own path. Very quickly started as a math major. That didn't last long. But then found a love for art history and then really found that that love was more for architectural history.
That's Damian Zanino. He eventually pivoted to architecture school and soon took on an exciting new job at a firm in New York.
So after school, worked for Cook Fox Architects, converting a lot of the old fish market buildings down in the South Street Seaport to residential. And I was on site there and loved kind of the hands-on aspect of that. And so just sort of like going back to the office, sketching something, and then having it be built in the next, you know, week was really gratifying. And I was on that project for about 2 years. And when that wrapped up, one of the retail tenants there asked if I would design a store for them. And I had zero retail design background.
The project was for a pet store called the Salty Paw, and Damian was eager to take it on. But he also knew that he needed some retail design experience to really pull it off. Luckily, someone he met around the neighborhood happened to fit the bill.
I'm not sure I had a plan, to be totally honest. I was like, absolutely, sure, let's do it, let's try it.
That's Britt Zanino. She had the design skills that Damian was looking for. But her own early career had a few more twists and turns.
I grew up in northern Michigan. As a child, I was always interested in design. I have this incredibly fashionable aunt that I grew up with who worked in fashion and always had these incredible interiors wherever she lived. And they were just so magical and so whimsical. And it was so inspiring as a kid. But I didn't necessarily think, oh, like I'm going to be a designer. After graduating from high school, I actually used to be a competitive snowboarder. So I moved to Colorado and had a different path other than always redecorating the house that I lived with, you know, like 8 other like snowboarder boys and trying to make the best of our crazy living situations.
Before long, Britt was ready for a change. She left Colorado behind and set off for New York to begin a career in fashion.
I did that for a few years in New York and loved the experience, but then ultimately I began helping out with store remodels and restorations for the brand I worked for. It became evident that that was the direction that I really wanted to go in, that the store design was really fun for me. And so I went back to school to study interior design at FIT, which was a great experience. I was still working and I took classes at night and I just made it all work. And then I freelanced at Martha Stewart, also in a really incredible learning experience for me. I worked as a freelance stylist and I really learned a lot about business and expectations and working very hard. And it was great. It was really wonderful. I was interested in retail design. I think Damien approached me knowing that I had that background. And so it was an opportunity when the Salty Paw was looking for help and he needed help. So, you know, I think it was just saying yes. I think a lot of how our company has evolved, it's been just being open to saying yes.
By the end of the project, their impromptu partnership had turned into a budding business. In 2007, they officially launched the architecture and interior design firm, Studio DB, and they would go on to get married 2 years later. I wanted to talk to them about how they communicate the value of a coordinated architecture and design process to clients, how a consultant helps sharpen the firm's structure and systems, and the way they've honed their ability to recognize when they're ready to grow.
When did you start to look at a body of work and say, all right, this is who we are, this is what our business is, this is the direction we want to start to move in really intentionally?
We've been really fortunate to get most of our projects word of mouth. It's been nice that things have sort of grown organically and that most of our clients have seen our work and then wanted to work with us. So we've been very fortunate, I think, to be able to kind of be true to ourselves and do work that we were excited about. I don't know, though. I think we're still sort of always looking for something new and different. I think probably like to our own detriment, like as soon as we've done something, like we don't really, you know, or as soon as we like use the material or we won't do it again. Like it would be so much easier to sort of say like, this is our thing and we'll, you know, this is our formula. You know, we've refined our business to be much more standardized. But I think in terms of our approach to design and projects and types of projects, I think it's still always evolving. We're always sort of looking for something that's new and that we'll learn from and that we go in with a fresh set of eyes.
But I do think after a few years of just the two of us working together, we made the decision. We had a few freelancers who had come in and to help with some drafting and intern and whatnot. And we were working out of our loft downtown. And then I was pregnant with our daughter, our oldest daughter, and I had the flu and everyone was in our loft and they were working. And I was just like, oh my God, like we need an office. That was like the first step. It's like, we need to grow up and we need to move out of the house and we need a real office and we need real help. And so I think when we hired Kate and Sunny, who were first two employees, I think that was a big step for us. There was a lot going on. So we had to recognize when we needed help. And I think that became a theme. And I think something that as our company has evolved over 18 years, recognizing when we need help, when we need to pivot, when we need to just be vulnerable, recognize where our weaknesses are and try to find solutions for them. That's an ever evolving thing for us.
But because we always like to sort of, you know, try it, be in a different market or a different type of project, you know, I think we very much know what our limitations are. And I think it's about finding people with strengths in that and collaborating or just, you know, picking their brain and learning from them. And I think there's so many talented people, you know, and experienced people. And it's always been important to us to kind of be very aware of our limitations and find the right people to seek out for information or support.
Like from the beginning, or, you know, since you founded the business, have you basically only worked in tandem together? Or do you also take like architecture only or design only jobs separately? Like how intertwined are the two of you in the actual work?
Occasionally we'll work with an outside firm if they're sort of like the architect of record or it's a collaboration but we would still be both involved. So I think like sometimes we'll do just a furniture package, maybe where it's like less of a heavy lift on the architecture side. But yeah, it's basically doesn't happen otherwise, which is good. I think we have a good system in place. And I think when we founded our company, it was really all about the idea that those two disciplines were working together. So it doesn't really fit our model to do something else. So
how do you work together or what does that look like? Where does one person's role begin and the other's end? Or, you know, like, what is that flow of ideas back and forth throughout the life cycle of a project?
I mean, we're working from the very beginning through move-in together. So there's certainly Damien or the senior architect on the project would be working on things like filing packages and things that are sort of specifically related to architecture. And I would be doing, you know, maybe the certain furniture details or whatnot. But we're really like from the creative, like starting like mood boards and thinking of initial floor plans and everything. We're doing it all together.
It's always one package. It's not really that we don't really view interior design and architecture as different design disciplines. I mean, obviously there are functional parts of it, and I could not put together a very good upholstery package for sure. So it's good. Like, I think there are those parts that our team specialize in. But like, I think that when it comes to like the creative part of design, it really is one team and one process. And like I think we also, the challenge of bringing those different viewpoints together, or those different scales or those different ideas, or, you know, like challenging each other and learning from each other is really like is such an important part of how we design. You know, bringing our different ideas together and figuring out how they merge. And I think we also like kind of the tension in our work sometimes. So it doesn't have to be a single, single idea. It's really about the dialogue and kind of seeing where it leads.
So that tension was sort of more the driver at the beginning than like some sort of like aesthetic mind meld or something like that.
Yeah. I think we approach things very differently. I think, often, and there's a healthy debate throughout the design process, but I think we have enough confidence in our relationship and each other that we're happy to have that debate. And that goes for our team as well. I think we have a lot of really amazing designers that work in our office, and everybody has a different point of view, and it's really great to hear other people's point of view. So we're comfortable doing that. It's not, you know, no, I don't think anyone gets offended. I think it's really a great exchange of ideas. And so yeah, I think it makes for a stronger project. And I think that goes for clients too. We work with a lot of creatives.
That's interesting, because they have opinions too.
They have a lot of opinions. They have a lot of opinions, but it makes the project better. Often, you know, creatives they're used to working in a team. They're used to this flow of ideas. So it's iterative. They understand the process. So I think it's really quite fun. It can be challenging, but it makes the project feel, our goal is always to create more of a feeling, you know, and create, set a tone and a mood and make it very personal for our clients. And so having them involved really makes our designs much more meaningful.
I want to talk about your team for a moment. I know you have, I think, nearly 20 today on the team. How did that grow over time?
Really, when we reached like the major change of staffing for us was during the pandemic. And that was really the biggest shift for our business, even before the true like lockdown started. I think just because I'm sort of maybe a nervous Nelly about certain things, I was like, we have to figure out how to work remotely. Like we put all these systems in place in the weeks leading up to when everything shut down. And that set us up for success. So when everyone actually was sent home, we had, you know, everyone had their packages of samples, and we had remote desktops working, and you know, we were really set up to go, which was really helpful. And then I think, you know, in the immediate, like right when everything happened, you know, there was no work. Everything was like shut down. You know, all of our job sites were shut down. Every, you know, projects that were about to start were obviously everyone's pausing. But it gave us opportunity to navigate like the next steps, to sort of look at how our business was operating, how could we be more efficient, training, all of that sort of thing. We scaled back to a 4-day work week, so we didn't have to lay off our team. And then figuring out how to navigate like working on projects outside the city, a lot of learning happening. And then, you know, as we became even bigger, onboarding new team members, that was challenging as well. So
one of the things I think we learned very quickly, and we had to, was before the pandemic, we'd always sort of done like one project outside of the city, and the rest of our work was essentially in New York City. And I think it made us realize and helped us, you know, we had to put in systems in place to be able to work remotely and to be able to do projects in different places. that we didn't, you know, have such a regular presence. And one of the things about our business model is, like, in the construction side, we're on site a lot, or we like to and have a really strong relationship with the contractor. And we obviously during the pandemic could not be on site with that frequency. And so we put in systems and we learned how to kind of do a lot of that remotely. And it really opened up the ability to do projects in all over the country, and then be able to do a couple international projects as well. And so I think that was something we definitely learned through the pandemic.
What are some of the secrets to navigating that relationship, like, or to managing a job site from your phone?
I mean, I think this has always been something that's really important to us, but just having a really strong relationship with contractors and fabricators and receiving warehouses and movers and artisans. And, like, that's always been really important to us. And I think everybody was learning to navigate doing that, you know, over Zoom or, you know, FaceTime or whatever. But, you know, I think just building those relationships in places with people we didn't, you know, in markets that we didn't have connections, was really critical in doing that.
You have to have trusted partners, because it's just not going to be successful. So, we've been really lucky. The projects that we've done internationally have had really wonderful contractors and team members on the ground. And so that's the only way that they can be successful, because you have to have somebody who can be your eyes and ears, and really open to being a team. But yeah, it's a little bit of a leap of faith to a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, I think we don't bring a lot of ego to it. I think we really enjoy collaborations, and we, you know, enjoy the value of those relationships. But it's, you know, we try to get to know people on a personal level, and obviously on a very professional level, but just try to make sure that it feels like, you know, the values of our companies align. And because I think, you know, something inevitably is going to go wrong somewhere along the way. And it's, you know, it's really important to have somebody that, you know, wants to work through it with you and not point fingers. And they're not all perfect. And, you know, we've learned a lot along the way.
We are taking a quick break to remind you to join the Crate and Barrel Trade Program. Your design projects deserve seamless execution. And that's where this trade program excels. From initial concept to install, Crate and Barrel's knowledgeable team provides concierge-level assistance, product expertise, and white-glove delivery. Plus, members enjoy an exclusive 20% discount with no minimum purchase on beautiful, high-quality furniture and decor from Crate and Barrel, CB2, and Crate and Kids. For unmatched support and members-only savings, join today at crateandbarrel.com/trade.
Going back to your team for a second, was there a big jump in the number of people you were managing, or was that something that sort of grew slowly and incrementally?
There are definitely some milestones along the way. I mean, we went from just the two of us to four with Kate and Sunny, and then we had like a couple of sort of freelance people. We got our first development project, a multifamily development project, where we did the interior architecture and design, which was One Van Dam down in Soho. And there we did grow our team. I think we probably added maybe four people. We kind of doubled at that point. And then we kind of stayed at that number for a while. We did some, you know, some good sized projects, but like we were really good at that size. And there's sort of these moments where like, well, I don't know that we'd ever want to be more than eight or maybe 10, you know, and then we had another multifamily development project, or sort of a large townhouse project. We'd add a person here or there, or somebody would recommend somebody that just felt like it could be a really great asset to the team. And so it just kind of happened. And when the pandemic started, we were 11, and we kind of went down to 10. And then, you know, and then things got really busy. And one of the things, as Brett was mentioning, we were kind of evaluating, you know, our systems, and we did start working with a business consultant. One of the things we realized when we were all a small team and in person is that, like, we knew what our systems were, and we just did them as a team. And when we were remote and we were growing and we were trying to onboard and hire and train people, we realized that we didn't have any documentation to like make that clear. And when we weren't able to like have all that FaceTime and, you know, sort of teach and mentor ourselves, like we realized how ill-prepared we were for that. And so one of the things with working with the consultant was sort of just creating, documenting all of our systems, being really clear about what our goals were and what our structure was. And you know, I think that's always still evolving, but I think that we really prioritized the clarity of our systems and what our goals were and our mission and our values.
Right. And during the pandemic, we essentially doubled our team.
Again. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Which was crazy and, you know, very difficult because you're doing it. A lot of people were remotely working. As Damien mentioned, the onboarding was really challenging. And then we would have limited time once the office was back open. You know, we could only have we really had outgrown our space. And so half the team would be in and then half would be out. And just getting people to know each other and work together on teams. And, you know, he had like the old crew and the new crew. And it was really, it was really challenging. I mean, everyone was great, but it was really a lot. And I think it was that point too. We recognized that we needed a more robust, you know, human resources situation. Mm-hmm. You know, just couldn't be the two of us. And also recognizing that we really needed someone who would be like a director of operations, and adding this like third person to help us with, you know, all of those duties, which it just became very clear that we were ready for that. We really were past that point, really. we needed help. So that was a big step for Damien.
It was a very big step. I did a huge chunk of the, you know, I did all the proposals. I did all the invoicing. I did all the, you know, the relationships and the business development side we did collectively, but like sort of the back office stuff was something I held very close. And I had a really hard time with the idea of letting other people in on that.
Was it about control? Was it about saying, you know, if I do this, I know it's right. Did you actually like it? Like, what was driving really wanting to keep that on your plate?
All of the above, right?
Okay. I liked the control. I liked knowing exactly where things stood. I mean, we were small and the, you know, every dollar did matter and, you know, it still does, but like, it was just, I don't know. I think it was very much a control thing. I like that part of it. I appreciate the business side of it, but I think it was definitely a struggle for me to let go of that or to bring somebody else into it. And, you know, it's still very collaborative, but, it's really nice to not be the one responsible for it all.
You know, I think we recognized also that we were missing out on opportunities because we were so backlogged, you know, and like putting together proposals. And also we have four kids and we had, you know, we just had a lot going on personally as well. And it just felt we doubled our team. We had all these amazing opportunities, but we were just dropping the ball. And we really needed somebody who could focus on those things so that it was a good thing for us to do. But we had to be vulnerable and just admit that it was time and it was someone else could do it better.
Where do you go looking for that person? What job have they had before, or sort of what qualities felt most important for someone in that role?
This is a very good setup because we found both of our business directors on Business of Home.
Oh, no way. That's great.
Yeah, 100%. The first one was, you know, was very much during the pandemic, and she was fantastic. She had worked in a couple architecture firms, but also had experience. She had run the business side of a vineyard and had her own business before. So she kind of knew all aspects of that side of it. And it was really great to just have somebody who knew so much more than we did. She ultimately moved upstate and wasn't able to be in the office as much. And so we started looking for a new person. The person who is currently in that role had worked at Christie's and previously at Sotheby's and had worked in the design department, but also on the business side of it, and just had an appreciation for design, but not in any way a background in design or architecture. And having somebody come in with sort of a fresh viewpoint was really helpful too.
Yeah, and she's very forward-thinking and I think was really interested in sort of the next steps of growing the business and next steps of like innovation on our end. And so that was really the next step, I think, for us, which was great.
Designers tell me sometimes that there are different phases of management sort of as your team grows. Can you tell me a little bit about how you felt in your roles at kind of at the helm of the firm when it was small, when it was sort of a little bigger, and maybe now when you have this larger team, does it ask like something different of you, like emotionally or as a boss?
I think so. I mean, I also think we were younger and we had a lot less experience. And so I think in the beginning, I'm not sure we were always the best managers. I think we were sort of learning as we were going as well. I think it was like maybe more friendly. And I think we encouraged everyone to have like a different point of view, which I think we still do now. But I think people kind of did things their own way and we were okay with that when it was a smaller office. And then we realized as we grew, like there had to be like so many more levels of consistency, and we had to just have like baseline like standards in a way that maybe it can be like a little bit loosey-goosey maybe when you're a smaller office.
I would say for the first 10 years, we basically, it felt like a startup. Like we were always just reacting. We were going from, I mean, we were always growing and doing really great things, but just from a management standpoint, it was very reactive. It was putting out fires or just going sort of from one issue to the next and never kind of focusing on the systems. And I think, you know, when we paused a little bit and ironed that out and put it in like real clarity of our expectations in place, I felt like finally, and had the right team and the right people help us, it just feels very different. I think the way we, I don't know. I mean, there's always things from a day-to-day standpoint, but it's really fun to be able to be much more forward thinking about, you know, our approach to projects and building our business and, you know, what our real goals are.
You mentioned at one point that, you know, you said, oh, we'll never get bigger than 8 people or whatever it is. Do you put that limit on your ambitions for the business or the size of the business now?
When we hired a director of operations, a business, director of business, that allowed us, I think, to grow to, you know, to 12 people and ultimately to 20 people. And then having support for that person as well. I think that because we love the design part of it and we really enjoy the client relationships, we found that if we had too many projects going on, we felt detached from or just not as connected to each project as we wanted to be. And I think that that's where we sort of realized that, you know, this feels like a good size and a good number of people and a great, you know, great team. But I don't think that we would want to grow bigger than where we are now. I think that we just, part of our love of it is the connections with our clients and the connections to the projects and being able to actually design and, you know, collaborate with our team. And I think it feels like we're not able to give
this
that
is
each
the limit.
Project. Yeah, exactly. If we're any bigger, you know, and I think like there have been moments where we just sort of had a few too many projects and like it just didn't feel like we were as connected as we wanted to be. I like where we are now.
What roles have you really carved out for yourselves? What are you most protective of maybe within the business? And then what were you more comfortable handing off to someone on your team?
We have a team of 5 architecture people. One of the things we also did was sort of create a team. So you have a senior and intermediate, or a senior and 2 intermediate and junior people within sort of the architecture and interior design side. But I think we have people that, you know, are architects but study interior design or vice versa. And I think that was always important. So everybody, it was helpful when people came into the company kind of understanding both sides of it. But we have architecture teams, we have interior design teams, and they collaborate on pretty much all of our projects. And then we have a support, we have a business director, we have a an office manager, our operations coordinator. And then one of the newer things in the last sort of 3 years, let's say, was we hired a procurement coordinator. And up until that point, sort of each team did that for their own projects. And we do a lot of procurement on both the architecture and interior design side. So we'll buy a lot of plumbing and tile and appliances and all the hardware, and then obviously all of the FF&E. And so every team used to do that kind of for their own projects. And I think it's been really helpful. It's still a very collaborative relationship with the procurement coordinator. But I think that was also a big shift that it freed up the teams to focus on design more. In terms of personally, I have some involvement in like preparing proposals for clients. Like I really, that was probably the biggest struggle. And as Britt mentioned, like sometimes my holdups of doing that would cost us jobs. Like I just couldn't it wasn't something I would prioritize because I dreaded doing it. And so there'd be some times where, you know, a week and a half would go by and, you know, hadn't put a proposal together and, you know, client would move in a different direction. And that was pretty painful. So it's really great having somebody else to handle that. And then I think that just being able to have more FaceTime and just more project meetings, we're always in every client meeting, but having more just individual team meetings and project meetings. And I think just having a little bit more time to do that has been great.
Yeah. And I think I wouldn't want to do this if I wasn't involved in like the details and like looking at all the fabrics and looking, you know, like that, that's the part that I love. And like the meeting new, you know, new furniture designers and new, you know, artisans that we're going to be work with, like developing those relationships is really, really important to me. So that's something that I don't think there's any point in doing it if we're not involved in, you know, in that process still. I think we have really talented people that work on with us on the team, and they bring so many wonderful ideas. And so sometimes it's just a matter of editing and but working with them, but it's all still very hands-on, which is really important to us.
You've had, you know, some of these team members for a very long time. How are you thinking about their growth and development as the firm grows and develops?
At this point, the person that's been with us the shortest amount of time has been with us for 3 years. And, you know, Sunny's been with us for 15 years, and there's a couple team members that have been with us for sort of 7 to 9 years. But I think it's always about, you know, giving them more opportunity and more opportunities for growth. And you know, Sunny started out as a draftsperson and is currently the director of architecture. So like there's been, you know, there's lots of growth opportunities along the way. I think it's sort of figuring out what people's interests are, what their strengths are, and then providing, you know, sort of tailoring roles to fit those and how they can best, you know, obviously benefit the firm. We've probably to our detriment, but our org chart is sort of always shifting, or our roles are always kind of evolving because, you know, we recognize, you know, more and more what people's interests and strengths are and kind of how they can best fill a role. And while we have sort of clear job descriptions, they do kind of evolve based on the individual.
This June, Dallas Market Center hosts key trade events for the business of design. On June 17th, attend Design Plus Build Day at Lightovation, North America's largest residential lighting show. Design Plus Build Day will welcome trade professionals for education, inspiration, and a preview of the newest lighting launches and trends. And also that week, you can explore Dallas Total Home and Gift Market for decor, artisan products, and up-and-coming brands. Shop smarter, source better, and find it all in one location. Visit dallasmarketcenter.com to learn more about design resources and events.
How many projects is sort of a comfortable volume at a given time for the business today?
I mean, I think it's fun to have like one large development project or hospitality project. And then, you know, I think depending on sort of the scale and scope, you know, maybe sort of like 6 to 8 projects in design. And then the rest kind of, you know, I guess probably we sort of have somewhere between 15 and 20 projects going at a time. Probably at the peak, it was sort of 25, 27. And that was probably
just 30.
Almost
that
hit
was,
30.
And yeah, that was when it felt less good.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I think it's sort of, you know, if there's projects under construction and projects in, you know, procurement and install phases, I think that that's kind of a good balance of, you know, around 20 projects.
What are you looking for in clients and projects today? You know, as you really assess where you want to devote that time and energy, what makes you say yes to a job now?
I think, you know, something different is always like really exciting to us. Like if it's a different location, if it's a different type of architecture, if it's more of a renovation or a ground up opportunity is always super exciting. But I think most importantly, it's really fun to have clients who are engaged in the process. And I think, you know, we work with a lot of different types of people, and some people are very involved and some people are not, and we can do it all and it's all fine. But I think it's really fun when the client shares the same amount of enthusiasm for the project as you do, because I think it's just, you know, you're working on it for sometimes years together. And so you want to make sure that you have the same set of values, that you're both excited about the project, I think open to ideas. that makes it the most fun, I think. And I think, you know, as Damien mentioned, something always goes wrong. There's always something that happens, you know, like, and there's a lot of money involved. And so you really want to make sure that you're working with somebody who, you know, is in it for the long haul, and they, you have a really open dialogue with one another. I think that that's really helpful.
I mean, I think we view, you know, when they're interviewing us, we're very much trying to get a feel for them and trying to understand, you know, the, you know, a lot of also what we do is sort of is marriage counseling and family, you know, or just therapy and, you know, just understanding dynamics, understanding decision-making processes. We ask a lot of questions, and we really want, you know, and there's a real range to our work because we want every project to feel like that, that person or that family's home. And so it's, you know, it's very much about us sort of telling their story through design and, you know, have it feel very personal. And, you know, when they walk in for the first time, that it's like, it feels just comfortable and it feels like theirs. And so it's really important that they're, you know, that we feel like they're open to that process and that they're, you know, and they're also trusting of us and what we do, but, that they're willing to share and be open and be excited about the process. And as Britt mentioned, bring that same enthusiasm.
Is there a certain aesthetic through line in the work that you can identify, even kind of within that sort of like push-pull of flexing to each client's needs?
I think we're always looking to do something that's like a little bit unexpected, whether that's in the detailing. I mean, our work is very detail-driven, so it's just like little nods. Maybe they're subtle, maybe they're not, but the details I think are incredibly important to us. And then I think that this level of personalization, you know, we know we love color, but I think that we can also do a room that's relatively neutral and still make it feel very cozy. And it's more about the texture, but I think it's very much about the details. Like during the pandemic, it was really interesting because we had a lot of clients who have reached out to us, and some had not really spent very much time in their homes, truthfully, because they worked a lot, or they maybe their projects were relatively new, and they would reach out and say, oh, you know, I didn't even realize that I had this, I don't know, little knob or little, you know, secret thing that you made me, and like, this is so special, and oh, so thoughtful. And that's like the greatest compliment to us, that when people discover things down the road, and there's just a thoughtfulness to it, and hopefully it feels fresh and it, but also feels timeless at the same time. So that's the goal.
Yeah. I mean, I think we like sort of unexpected juxtapositions, and I mentioned sort of tension between, you know, materials, but I think we want things that are very, very comfortable and warm and inviting. And, you know, that can mean different things to different people. But I think it's, yeah, I think all of our projects, we just want to feel very, I think both timeless, but fresh and, I don't know, just very, very inviting.
Coming into a project, you know, with the idea that your firm will be doing both the architecture and the design, no matter what the scope of the job is, how did that shape the way you talk about money with your clients or the way that you charge for the work that you're doing?
So from the beginning, we've always worked on a flat fee for pretty much everything. We now do like construction administration hourly, and sometimes we'll do bidding and FF&E install hourly, just depending on like how clear the scope of work is. Sometimes if people, you know, are either going to be living there and they want pieces to kind of show up as they're ready, then like we'll do like install hourly, because it may mean a lot of trips to the apartment to kind of help install things and set things up. I think one of the reasons we did a flat fee from the beginning was that it was good to sort of settle the financial part of it up front. I think we were always concerned with hourly that, like, you know, design is iterative. We may spend way too long on something and, you know, the client wouldn't see the value of that. Something maybe, you know, we may come to the idea that, you know, the first, our gut instinct about something turned out to be like the best idea. But also, I think there's also a model of like percentage of construction or like a high markup. And I think we felt like that was sort of I think a lot of our clients felt like the incentives there were maybe misaligned. And so we felt like doing a flat fee that kind of covered a fixed scope of work, you know, protected us, but also felt very fair to the clients. And so we've always worked that way. And, you know, it used to sort of just be like three phases. There would be schematic design development, and sort of a construction document phase. I guess there was always CA too. You know, now we do separate out interior design and architecture, partly because of charging sales tax and things like that on interior design services. But we still make it very clear that like we'll only do schematic design for, you know, architecture and interior design as one design process, and same with design development. But we do assign a fixed fee for each of those phases of the job.
Is that comfortable for the client? Do they understand sort of how you're assigning value to the work?
I think they appreciate the flat fee, knowing upfront like what it's going to cost. One, sometimes we run into a struggle because now we do separate architecture and interior design as separate phases, is that people will compare our proposals to an architecture firm only or an interior design firm only.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, well, your lump sum for this is X and theirs is only, you know, is, you know, half of X and, or, you know, or two thirds of X. And like, you know, why are you so much more expensive? And I think rarely is it apples to apples. And so I think sometimes we run into that struggle, and usually we can talk about it and explain our services and our process. But, you know, we are very full service, and we really put such a focus on design. So there's a lot of time associated with that. So I think it's just being really clear about our process and about all the deliverables.
Also, it's really important to us to be able to explain the value that we're bringing to the project as well, because I think if you have both interiors and architecture coordinated, there is a savings in terms of like our fees are going to be higher. I mean, we're just certainly not the least expensive firm, but we provide a lot of value. We're going to be very coordinated. There's, you know, hopefully the construction goes much smoother. You have less overhead and carrying costs, especially in New York. It's very expensive if you're living in a rental or you have a temporary space. So, I mean, we try to explain all of that and the efficiencies that go along with that. So ultimately there's hopefully a time and cost savings to having everything under one umbrella. And I think a lot of clients do appreciate that. And I think also just the time savings and just the energy savings of not hiring two separate firms is really appealing to people. Because I just think there's an emotional, like the idea of like if you coordinating between two firms that don't necessarily always agree. And it's just, that can be really challenging for clients who've done it in the past and have had that experience, and they don't want to do that again. So
there's like this exhale of like, oh, at least that's like not a conflict I have to manage.
And I think our role in CA too, in the construction administration, is very much meant to make sure that like we keep, you know, if something comes up on site, and it always does, it's like that we can address it quickly. So we're really doing our best to keep jobs on schedule and on budget and sort of minimize, you know, change orders or delays or, you know, coming up with quick solutions to things. So we enjoy that part, but it's also very much a benefit to our clients. And also, I think, you know, we have a lot of experience with that point. And so it's helpful for our clients. You know, some of them like to come to meetings because it's fun, but like they're not responsible for like managing the contractor, you know. Mm-hmm.
Are you always managing the contractor?
There are a couple instances where like the client and the contractor had sort of a relationship in advance of, you know, us being involved. But for the most part, it's, you know, we work with similar group of contractors on most of our projects. And, you know, we're always open to new people. And so, yeah, I mean, I think clients, you know, might come to job sites, and we'll certainly let them know, like, there are always sort of these key moments of like when the framing is laid out and making sure that the rooms all feel right. Or, you know, if something comes up, we very much bring them into a conversation. But I think it's they generally appreciate that they can rely on our experience and our relationship with the contractors to manage the process. For the most part, we generally are managing that, and we like doing it, and we look at that very much as a collaboration with a contractor. Like, I know sometimes there's this very adversarial relationship between architects and contractors, and we've always sort of appreciated their knowledge and their experience, and it's a good relationship, an important relationship.
I want to talk a little bit about what happens when the project is done and press. As the firm grows, as you're getting published, as you're getting awards in the industry, how does that start to change the opportunities that come your way?
Well, it's interesting. Over the past few years, I guess it was 3 years ago, we decided that was another big step for us, or a milestone for us, is we decided to hire a PR firm. So we hired Donald Goldberg, which we have been working with, and we love working with them. And they, and I think part of that was just recognizing that we had relationships with editors, we had relationships with people in the industry, and they knew our work. But the reality was that we were just working so much that we really didn't have time to respond really to requests. We really didn't have time to put together any sort of packages to send to press. Like, it just, we just didn't have time to really, we had these beautiful projects that were sitting there the same way our proposals were.
Right.
And we couldn't really get them out there. So we decided to take that step of hiring a PR firm, which has been really wonderful for us and a great experience. We also joined The Expert, which is the online portal for, you know, online design, which has been really wonderful, and meeting people from all over the world, actually. So that's been another way to get our names out there and to meet new people.
Do you feel the difference when you do that kind of stuff? Does it change the type of inquiries that are coming in for full service design?
I think it does. I think that we still have a very strong network of word of mouth, you know, and referrals, which is really meaningful. And a lot of our work has come that way. And we have so many repeat clients. You know, at any given time, we're always doing a project for a past client. There's always something going on at the office, at least a couple. I think that it's, though, given us this opportunity to work with people who really connect with us stylistically. So it's not just, you know, their friend gave us a really wonderful review, but like, we really aesthetically align. And so I think it's opened us up to working on projects that maybe are a little bit crazier or like more creative, or just because they maybe saw something on Instagram or saw something in press. So that's been fun.
Is that kind of cadence of getting work published still sort of an important driver for you as you look ahead?
It is, but I think that we went through a period where we were shooting everything and, you know, felt the need to shoot every single project and try to get it out there. And I think it's incredibly expensive endeavor. You know, I think a lot of magazines don't have the budgets that they used to in order to really produce shoots on their own. So I think the onus is very much on a lot of designers to produce the work and hire the photographer and the stylist and all of that. And it's incredibly expensive. And so I think we have shifted our focus to, you know, really shooting projects that I think are spending, investing in those certain projects, but certainly not all of them.
Well, you just published a beautiful book.
Thank you.
I would imagine that phase of shooting everything was actually very helpful for the book, or maybe motivated by the book in part.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Which came first? Were you shooting everything and then it became a book? Or was it that you wanted to do a book, therefore you shot everything?
So half of the book was already photographed with Matthew Williams, who we've worked with for a long time. And then when we did get the book deal with Rizzoli, we knew that we had a certain amount of projects they wanted to include that were, a lot of them were under construction. And then we had a few projects that were past projects that we wanted to go back and reshoot that really were meaningful projects for us and just sort of the journey of our firm. And so it was important for us to capture them again. They had already been photographed, but we went back and reshot them so that the photography was consistent. And, you know, it felt fresh and new.
How do you approach photography kind of strategically to make that investment make sense, to know that you'll sort of have the body of work that you need to kind of deploy it effectively?
I think having experience, my experience working at Martha, just even as a freelance stylist, does inform the process. I think just like having the experience of working on set, I think, though I think early on we didn't hire stylists.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, are you styling your own projects or no?
No. I mean, occasionally, I don't know, but not really. I think that we recognize, no. I mean, I think it's another thing that it's like, no, that I want to really work with the best. I think that that's like a through line also. I think we just have, as we've matured, as our company has evolved, like I think we want to do the best possible work that we can do, and we want to partner with the best possible people. So it's recognizing when we're not bringing the best to the table, then we really need to be partnering with someone who is. And I think that, you know, there are certain projects that I definitely did some styling, whether, you know, it was for budgetary reasons or whatever. But I think now our commitment is just working with the best photographers, the best stylist, and doing it right. And I love it. I love the photo shoot piece of it. Like that's one of my most favorite things. That's probably the thing that I'm not totally willing to give up. But when we bring in an amazing photographer and you bring in an incredible stylist, they're going to see it differently. And that's actually kind of the fun magic part,
right?
That's the magic. And I think sometimes you can just get in your, zone that you've seen it this way, a certain way for years. And then they come and they turn it kind of upside down and it looks amazing and different. And that's the fun part, I think. So
how does it feel to have the book out in the world?
It was kind of scary, but now it's great. I don't know, Day, what do you think?
I don't know. It's really exciting. It's great to be able to share it with friends and family and clients and just have people be a little more aware of our work, be able, I don't know. It's been fun. It's still scary. I don't know. It just, you know, all of our work is out there on our website and, you know, on Instagram and things like that. But it's, I don't know, it feels, you're really putting yourself out there. And I don't know, I guess also because there's all the text and there's a story and like, it is just very, it's, our work is very personal, but our narrative is very personal too. And so I think feel very exposed sometimes. I think it's sort of, I did this imposter syndrome. Like it just seems crazy that we have a book with Rizzoli of our work. I know we've been doing it for 18 years and we have all these projects, but it just still feels surreal.
When you look ahead, how do you think about what comes next? What does leveling up mean to each of you? And how do you define success?
I will say that it's really funny. We have this habit. So
I was going to tell the story. Go ahead.
Oh, you were going to tell the same story.
No, you tell it.
Well, because we have a relatively hectic life, like with the kids and with work and with everything else. And we reach this point where we're like, okay, we really need to slow down and like, let's go away. Just the two of us. This does not happen very often, but whenever it does, we get to spend like a weekend away or something like that together. And we start the weekend with like, how can we, you know, make our lives easier? How can we slow down and whatever? And then by the end, by like Sunday, we're like, we're starting two more companies. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And we can't like help ourselves to think about like doing more.
Are you really going to start two more companies?
I don't know. We'll see. Not in like a big company, but like maybe a division.
No, I think doing more collaborations, more, you know, I think we do more furniture, you know, I don't know if it's a furniture line, you know, hardware. I think there's just all these things that are exciting and inspiring for us and that we've been talking about these things for a long time. We actually now are getting to like really do them. And I think that feels very rewarding. In terms of growth or next steps, I mean, I think there's types of projects we really want to do. I think we really want to do more hospitality.
We did a retail store in Texas recently for Lila Rose, which was so much fun. So it makes me want to do more like commercial or like retail or, you know, where you get to tell a brand story, which I think is really fun. So when we first started our company, I think like our work was 50% residential, 50% commercial. You know, we did some like bakeries and the pet store and some restaurants and a little Italian grocery and all these little things. And then during the recession, that stopped because no one was really opening a business. So then we just focused primarily on residential and that became our thing. But I think branching out to other things like that, it would be fun. I mean, the project in Texas was so much fun. I mean, mostly because of, I think, Lila and her team, and they were so great. But I'd love to do more of that.
What does success mean to each of you personally? What makes you feel successful?
I think it's just feeling both challenged and fulfilled with the quality of the work, just doing things that we're proud of. I mean, I think that that's such important. Having clients that are happy, having a team that
feels fulfilled.
Yeah, feels fulfilled. And yeah, I think it's very much about those qualities.
That's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to keep up with the latest design industry news, check out new products, or browse job openings, head on over to businessofhome.com. And if you're enjoying Trade Tales, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts to help others discover the show. If you have a note for the show or a story of your own to share, I'd love to hear from you. And you can email me at tradetales@businessofhome.com. Trade Tales is produced by me, Caitlin Peterson, and Caroline Burke. This episode was edited by Caroline Burke and Michael Castaneda. Our theme music is by Kyle Scott Wilson. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you back here next week.